Previously on Snicktoons, I was joined once again by the, I'm not really quite sure how to describe him, perhaps the most professional guest that we've ever had on this podcast, Mr. Steve Banvard. He came back to help me watch and break down the season 5 and also series finale for X-Men the Animated Series, season 5, episode 10, Graduation Day. And it was a bittersweet episode. Like, I was super glad to have covered the finale episode, having gotten through every single episode of X-Men the Animated Series, and I could not have had a better co-host for that episode. So many fun little callbacks and things to mention that did not escape his sight. He was able to bring up so many things, and it was just such a great episode. I loved breaking that episode down and discussing its merits as a season finale, as a series finale, just as an overall story with someone like Steve. So if you haven't listened to last week's episode, make sure you go back and do that. Of course, we also had a really great top five of Wolverine's deaths or pretty darn closes. And it was a lot of fun kind of going through some of the more creatively gruesome ways that Wolverine has almost met his maker. And some of the ways that he has. So it was a lot of fun. Of course, if you have listened to last week's episode, then make sure you stay tuned because I am going to be jumping into an X-Men, the Animated Series retrospective. We're going to be doing some top fives and getting some listener information. So it should be a great episode. X-Men, the Animated Series. I mean, what more is there to say about this series that hasn't already been said? It is the largest foundational piece of my X-Men fandom. I'm a huge fan when it comes to the comic books of the Claremont run. I think it had some very high highs, and even the lows of the Claremont era were still pretty darn high, especially compared to everything that came before and everything that has come since. And that includes Claremont's various returns to the book. Nothing that's been done since the end of the Claremont run has been as consistently good as those 16 years that he was the driving force behind it. And it's hard to take that time that he was around and distill that down into a palatable dose. I mean, there are podcasts out there that have covered X-Men, the Animated Series, and it has taken them hundreds of episodes to get through the entire Claremont run, going through issue by issue, story by story, because he was the sole driving voice behind the X books for the better part of two decades. Pretty much the entire 80s and most, at least half of the 70s, most of the 80s, and he even ushered them into the 1990s. He was only there for, of course, the 1990 and 1991, but still, he's the one that ushered us into that era. And most of the important relationships, most of the important pieces of all of the main characters' backstories that still stand today and still inform these characters and the writers who take on telling these new stories was laid throughout the course of the Claremont run. He redefined certain characters that had existed before him. He added layers of depth, and he really fleshed out almost all of everyone's favorite characters. there are plenty of X-Men characters that have been introduced since his run came to an end that people would nowadays say are among their favorite characters, but I still think the vast majority of X-Men fans would be able to trace their fandom to some part of the Chris Claremont era of X-Men, whether that be in the pages of Uncanny X-Men or New Mutants or Excalibur or Wolverine, or even in the various books that spun off or miniseries that were written about characters who, again, were informed by Chris Claremont, but maybe he didn't necessarily have a hand in thinking the initial launch of X Factor, a couple of the other minis that were out there, the Longshot mini, the Fallen Angels. There's a couple others that he didn't write, but he did have a big part of as far as the direction those books went. So what X-Men the Animated Series manages to do is give us kind of like a greatest hits of the Chris Claremont era, but reimagined in the 90s style. And there was enough creative freedom that the writers of this show were kind of able to take the characters in different directions. They were able to reinterpret certain things to kind of fit their overall story while staying true to the fundamentals of what makes X-Men so great. And I think that is why this animated series kind of stands head and shoulders above almost every other animated series that's been created that is based on comic books that aren't necessarily written for children. There are exceptions to that rule. I think Batman the Animated Series is probably the biggest one as far as other series that are just as good or better at interpreting the source material, managing to keep all of the great stuff about the characters while also making it, you know, family friendly. They're making it a children's cartoon. I think there are a lot of cartoons out there that tried to do what X-Men the Animated Series did, especially Marvel cartoons that seem to fall utterly short. I think Spider-Man is up there, but you look at a lot of the other animated series that Marvel has put out, especially the ones in the 90s, and they don't hold a candle to the X-Men or even Spider-Man for that matter at all. The Fantastic Four, the Silver Surfer, the Incredible Hulk, Iron Man, those shows, they're fine. There's definitely merit to watching those shows. Those shows deserve to have their fandoms, but they don't do nearly as great a job as X-Men the Animated Series did. And I think that comes down to the creative folks that were the driving force behind the series being made, starting with Eric Liewald, and of course, I think being shepherded through the direction of Larry Houston. I think those two men in particular, having been in the creative direction, you know, the driving force behind the creativity of this series is why it's so good. They managed to bring in writers who are either just as big a fans of the source material or at least respect the source material enough to want to adapt it as closely as they can while also writing a show that is going to be enjoyable for children but also attracts an older audience who may in fact be fans of the comics. And the show works. Again, it's the same thing with Batman, but I don't really feel that you get that with those other Marvel shows. Even the Marvel shows that have come after, they don't seem to do what this show does. I know in my early episodes, before I ever started bringing in the co-hosts and doing that whole format, I tried to spotlight some of the members of the cast and crew, and I think I did a pretty good job there. So I'm not going to spend too much time going back through and highlighting all of the various cast members and the different crew members. We've made sure to give all of the writers credit for each episode as we've introduced them, so we've at least acknowledged them as well. And of course, I've spoken at length about each of the voice actors who voiced all of the major characters. So while we're here with a retrospective, I'm not really quite sure where to go. You know, this is, we're kind of coming in off the cuff. I have a few things that I've prepared that I wanted to talk about for this show. And so I guess we'll just start diving into those. One thing I wanted to do is do a ranking of each of the seasons. There are five seasons, so I was going to rank them from least good to most good. I don't think there is a bad season. I definitely disagree with the sentiment out there that the final season is a bad season. Rewatching it very recently, there are things about it that I can understand where people come from. It is a different animation studio. After season four, the animation was moved from Acom, which was an animation studio in Korea, to a smaller animation studio. I actually don't have it written down. I want to say it was Sunbow, but like, don't quote me, because I'm like 99% sure that I'm wrong, but that's the name that's popping into my head right now. It was a animation studio from the Philippines, and it was a much cheaper animation studio. It was a whole lot less expensive to produce these episodes through that studio. But of course, you can definitely see a difference in the quality from that fifth season and all of the seasons that came before that. There is definitely a step down in the animation quality, but the animation is still good. Like, does it hold up to the final season of Batman the Animated Series, where the WB did the same thing? They went to a cheaper studio. I think it probably doesn't hold up compared even to that season, but the animation is good enough. The characters are still good enough, and the way that they animate the action, it all still works. Like, we still get some of, maybe not the best, but we still get some very exciting episodes in this season. And I don't think that the animation is bad by any stretch of the imagination. It's not bad animation. It is just lower quality animation compared to the first four seasons. And there's a reason for that. They went to a different studio that was a little cheaper. Maybe they did things more quickly. Maybe they had less good materials to work with, and so the animation just didn't live up to the previous four seasons. But again, in no way is it bad animation, and I don't think it's enough to detract from the quality of most of the episodes that we got in that final season. That being said, I do believe that season five is the fifth best season of X-Men the Animated Series. It's the shortest at only 10 episodes. It is definitely a disjointed season. We have random episodes with Beast, Wolverine, Jubilee. None of the stories really seem to lead into the next. Like, you can watch the Phalanx Covenant in a vacuum. You can watch the Stormfront episodes in a vacuum. Old Soldiers, Jubilee's Fairy Tale Theater. None of those episodes really are telling an overarching story. And so when we get to our season finale and our series finale, we don't really have a whole lot of buildup to that payoff. It's still good. I still really enjoy this season, but I do agree that it is the least good season. I do think that despite the fact that the Edens brothers had left the show like a season and a half before, there really isn't that big of a downstep in the writing quality. Many of the episodes were written by Steve Melching and Dave McDermott, and I thought that they were all really good episodes. There's a couple other people that come in and write some episodes as well. Of course, we got another Len Wein episode. So, like, there's really strong writing throughout this season, and even all the voice acting is all really good. I think the only one that maybe doesn't live up to the previous seasons is the Gambit voice acting for this season. I think maybe they had gone with a different actor. I'm not sure. I forgot to double check. I know that it was Chris Potter, I believe, that did the voice of Gambit through the first four seasons. I do think that they had to get like a backup voice actor for Gambit in this season, but I don't remember if that's correct or not. But it definitely doesn't sound the same, and the accent is a little off compared to the first four seasons. I would probably go with the fourth season next as the fourth best. Again, the studio was kind of pushing them away, both from overarching storylines per season, as we got in season one, and then they had to sneak in for season two, and they didn't really tell any major long-term stories with the exception of Beyond Good and Evil that we got four parts to. Other than that, you know, we had a couple of two-parters here and there. We didn't really have like an overarching story or theme that I felt the first three seasons had. That being said, some of my favorite episodes come in the fourth season, and I think that overall the fourth season gave us some really good action-packed episodes. We got a lot more character development from even further characters that we maybe hadn't been getting enough development from by this point. But I do think that because it doesn't have that like overarching kind of theme or storyline or arc, that season four does end up being the fourth best season. And then here's where we're going to see, like, it's not just going backwards, right? Like, five is five, four is four, three is three, two is two. I would actually put season two as the third best. I think that despite the fact that the studio had come down and said, hey, we don't want an overarching storyline, sort of like what we got in season one, it wasn't necessarily an overarching storyline in season one, I would say. It does kind of go, this story, but then that story leads into the next story, which leads into the next one. Like, there's definitely those moments where things lead into each other, and then ultimately we get a culmination. We don't necessarily have that in season two, and we didn't get anything like that, unfortunately, in season three either. We did get some clever stories with season two, however. We did have the Xavier and Magneto trapped in the Savage Land, where we would get a brief snippet each episode until we got to that two-part finale. Of course, the two-part finale featured characters that we had seen in the two-part premiere, kind of coming full circle, and then that we had seen them kind of scattered, I think maybe one or two episodes in season two as well. So I like season two. I think that it would have been better had they actually been allowed to do more of an overarching story, especially with a villain like Mr. Sinister. I thought his two-part premiere and his two-part finale, kind of as like the big bad for the season, I thought those worked really, really well. I just wish they would have been able to put more continuity in the intervening eight episodes. I think that would have been much better, and I think it would have made the season a lot better. That being said, we still got some really great episodes in season two as well. I think my number one favorite episode overall is from season two, but I think it kind of lacks the quality that season one had, and it doesn't quite match the epic storytelling that we saw in season three. So I would say season two would be my number three season, and then season one would be my number two season. I think season one is fantastic. Season one is probably the season that I have the most nostalgia for. I had a lot of those episodes on their like official VHS releases. I had the entire season taped on VHS tapes from like Walgreens. So it's growing up, it was like the one season that I always had in its entirety that I can watch from start to finish. And it's probably the season that has the episodes that I've watched the most. Maybe not necessarily my favorite episodes. I think only one episode from season one cracked my top five. But that being said, I just think that it's such a great season and introduced us to the Sentinels, to the Morlocks, to great villains like Magneto and Mystique and Juggernaut and Apocalypse. Like, we had some of the best villains, and they all showed up in season one. We had great guest appearances from Cable and Colossus. And I did really like that kind of overarching story, that the threat of the Sentinels. I really enjoyed it, and I thought that they'd done a fantastic job. Of course, we also had the whole thing with Morph and him dying at the end of the first episode. Like, this season was not playing around. This season kind of pulled out all the stops and we're like, hey, we're going to go big from the start because we got to draw these kids in. We got to draw these fans in. We got to make this a lasting phenomenon. And they nailed it every time. I don't think there's a weak episode in season one. And I just think overall it is the second best season that we got. And of course, now you know that my number one season is the third season. The third season has a couple of my favorite episodes that have made my top five list. Again, we got a lot of one-offs, a lot of smaller self-contained stories, but we got so many moments of character development from all of our favorite characters, except maybe Jubilee didn't have a whole lot to do in season three. But otherwise, I think that each of the characters had different time in the spotlight. We got to see different aspects of the characters that we maybe hadn't seen before. And of course, despite having like an overarching storyline, we still managed to get the five episode Phoenix Saga and the 4-episode Dark Phoenix Saga in this season. And I think that alone is what makes this the best season, because they went for the long form storytelling. All right, we can't tell a whole season. We're going to try something new. We're going to do a story where we're going to move this into the prime time after school slot and do one episode a day for a whole week. That's how big this story is. That's how big of an event this thing is going to be. Of course, I'm talking about the Phoenix Saga. And even though the Phoenix Saga and the Dark Phoenix Saga maybe aren't my favorite storylines overall, I can't argue with how they reshaped the saga. I mean, there's a reason why fans today still refer to those like 8 issues of the comic as the Phoenix Saga, even though the comic storyline didn't really feature Phoenix at all as a major driving factor in that story. Really, she's kind of there at the beginning and then she factors in at the very end, but otherwise she is not the central focus of that storyline. Lilandra and Deken and how the X-Men respond to that, that is the driving force behind that story. We get a lot more Shi'ar stuff there, and I think more appropriately comic book wise it would be better to refer to it as, you know, the M'Kron Saga or the Shi'ar Saga or even the Lilandra Saga rather than the Phoenix Saga. But the way that X-Men the Animated Series was able to not necessarily rebrand and not even like reinterpret, they were just able to repurpose certain parts of the story, allow a greater focus on the probably the one character on the team that had the least development through the first 2 seasons, Jean Grey, really kind of refocus the story around her journey as the Phoenix. And I think because of that, when we get to the Dark Phoenix a few episodes later, we really do have the gravity of all of that. And even though the Dark Phoenix Saga that we get in the cartoon is a much more watered down version of the comic Dark Phoenix storyline, I feel like it has just as much gravity and it hits just as hard for the animated series as the Dark Phoenix Saga did for the comic books all the way back in 1980. So those 9 episodes in and of themselves has me listing the 3rd season as my number 1 season of X-Men the Animated Series. So another topic that I had, another thing that I wanted to talk about for X-Men the Animated Series is just a handful of my favorite lines, different things that I noticed that I had jotted down throughout. Most of them are Wolverine quotes, and most of them are from like Night of the Sentinels. But I just had like 5 or 6 quotes from some characters that I really wanted to go over. I think one of my favorite lines from this entire series is the Jubilee line from the end of Night of the Sentinels Part 2. You probably all already know what I'm talking about, but it's after she chooses to go to the Xavier Academy or the Xavier Institute, live with the X-Men, become an X-Man, learn how to control her mutant powers. Her foster parents are asking, like, are you ever going to come back and visit? And of course, Jubilee, being the typical like 90s, just fun, happy-go-lucky teenager, says perhaps her most iconic line in the series, which is, does a mall babe eat chili fries? Like, that line just, it totally encompasses everything that Jubilee stands for. Culturally and timely, I don't know, that's probably not the right word, but like for a 90s teenager in the year 1992, referring to herself as a mall babe, talking about eating chili fries, like that is absolutely everything that Jubilee should have been and was in the 90s. And she's an icon. Like, 90s Jubilee is absolutely an icon. She's a character that I didn't necessarily grow up liking as a young boy and then even as a teenage boy and stuff. But like, now that I'm an adult and I can kind of look back and see the charm and the humor that she brings and like the fresh set of eyes that she brings to the X-Men team and just her like very refreshing honesty, but also being very cool at all times. I just love that line. Like, that is the typical Jubilee line, and I don't think she ever has a line better in the rest of the series. So yeah, without a doubt, my favorite Jubilee line is, "Does a mall babe eat chili fries?" Which means yes, by the way. It's, you know, when you answer a question with a question. So next up, one of my favorite characters of the series, one of my favorite X-Men overall just because of this series, and that's Gambit. And Gambit has a lot of really great lines throughout the entire show because of the way he talks. He's got that really great accent. I have no idea if that's an accurate Cajun accent at all. Based on stuff that I've heard, not really, but it's still very iconic. It's still very fun. And my favorite Gambit line has to be from season 2, the finale episode, Reunion Part 2. Gambit and Rogue have, as well as the rest of the X-Men at this point, they've been captured by Mr. Sinister and the Nasty Boys and the Savage Land mutates, and they are being held in the Savage Land in Sinister's stronghold in like a random jail cell that's there. They don't have their powers because of what Sinister has done to this area, right? One of the things that they realize when they get there in Reunion Part 1, when they first land in the Savage Land, is that none of them have their mutant powers, except the bad guys, of course. Sinister finds a way to block out all mutant powers except for the mutants who he wants to be able to access their powers. So, of course, the X-Men are, you know, handily defeated. I think Wolverine escapes and meets up with Kazar and all that stuff. But what we have is Gambit and Rogue, and they are in this jail cell together. And Mr. Sinister is like, "Hey, let's do some more experiments. Why don't we experiment on, you know, this lady right here?" And they're holding each other, Gambit and Rogue, they're holding each other. And Rogue is, she's looking terrified. And she says to Gambit, like, "Remy, I'm scared." And Gambit just like takes a deep breath, and I'm going to do the accent. It's going to be terrible, so I apologize now. But he's like, "Be brave, Cher. Gambit never to say this to anyone before, but Gambit loves you." I just love that line, right? Like, he's never said "I love you" to anyone. He's finally telling Rogue that he loves her, and he doesn't even say "I love you." He says, "Gambit loves you." And I just love that, like, even in perhaps the most dramatic moment of his entire life, he still refers to himself as Gambit and doesn't say "I." I just love that. It's great. Of course, there's a Cher thrown in there. So anytime Gambit throws out Cher or Petit, you know it's a good line. Another one of my favorite lines from Gambit is in the Nightcrawler episode when Rogue and Wolverine and Gambit are about to go skiing. And even though he's never been skiing, he's like, "Gambit, a natural athlete." You know, like trying to explain, like, "I don't need skiing lessons. I'm a natural athlete, so obviously I'm going to be good at skiing, duh." Of course, in the episode, we see that he is not very good at skiing. But yeah, those are probably my two favorite Gambit moments, or at least favorite Gambit lines, just how silly they are. He's got a lot of great lines, you know, but yeah, I just like those ones because it's like they're just such tension breakers. Just the way that he says the line. Of course, as a kid, you don't question it. You're just like, "Yeah, Gambit loves Rogue. That's why he said that." But then when you're an adult, you're like, "Oh, that sounds weird." But it's fun. I don't have favorite episode or quotes for every character. Like, I don't think I have any Jean or Scott or Xavier favorite quotes. I will jump into my favorite quote of The Beast. This is another season 1 episode. This is Night of the Sentinels Part 1. And this is a scene where after the X-Men, I guess, so when Jubilee gets to the mall and she's attacked by the Sentinel and the X-Men that are there, they're able to attack the Sentinel. Eventually, Cyclops shows up. shoots an optic blast through the sentinel's neck and like cuts the sentinel's head off. They bring the sentinel head back to their base, and going through its computer, they are able to track its creation to the Mutant Control Agency headquarters. And the X-Men decide, like, hey, we're going to go to this place and we're going to see what we can find out. We're definitely going to destroy all of these mutant files that clearly this Sentinel has access to, and then we'll see what else we can find. So Cyclops takes a team of X-Men, and Storm takes like a second team, but they all kind of land together and make their way to a point where they then break off into their different groups. And so the X-Men, they land the Blackbird like back in this forest thing, and they're all kind of walking, making their way to the Mutant Control Agency headquarters. And even though they're like on a field mission, and even though Cyclops and Storm are both there leading them, you'd think that they'd be super serious about it, but they're not. As they're walking to the headquarters, they're just kind of like chatting. And it, you know, obviously the reason here is to let the viewers get to know the characters, because we hadn't really seen them in action yet. But it's kind of weird that like they'd be going into a mission and they're just like having a conversation. But one of the conversations they're having is about how they all became mutants. And Rogue is asking Beast, like, where did mutation come from? Like, why are we mutants? And he's kind of explaining, like, there are different theories, you know, radiation, evolution, television, all these different things. And Rogue goes into a story where she explains how she got her mutant powers and the first thing that happened to her, and how it was like this terrible traumatic thing where she kissed a boy named Cody. He was in a coma for 3 months and all that. And after she tells this like heartbreaking story of how her mutant powers first manifested, and, you know, she managed to put her first love into the hospital, Beast very nonchalantly says, "Consider yourself fortunate. I had dandruff." I just love that line. Like, it's such a tension breaker. It's hilarious because he just says it with such deadpan earnesty. Earnestism. I don't think that's a word. He's just very serious about it. You know, like, he considers that like a very bad thing. I think there is a air of brevity there. Like, he is trying to make light of the situation, but just the way he delivers that line, like, is so dead on. Of course, the Beast has so many great lines throughout this entire series. He's quoting philosophers. He quotes the Bard, paraphrases them quite a bit, which I'm a huge Shakespeare fan. So to hear him just throwing out quotes from like, even like lesser known plays is really cool. But like, he quotes some of my favorite plays. He's got quotes from King Lear, quotes from Hamlet, quotes from Macbeth. You know, you always, like, whenever it's Shakespeare, people want to talk about Romeo and Juliet or Hamlet. Like, that's what they want to talk about. Sometimes you'll get a little bit of Macbeth in there, but like, it seems rare that we ever get like a King Lear reference, and we get one of those, a couple of those. So it's pretty cool. I think maybe one from the Comedy of Errors, something like that. Just like a really obscure one. But it's just fun stuff. This version of Beast, hands down, is the absolute best version of Beast. Like, even 90s comic book Beast, he comes close, but he's not quite as good as this Beast. And I don't know if it was just the Edens brothers in particular, or if it was Eric Lewald himself that was like driving the voice behind Beast, but Beast in the first four seasons especially, I mean, he's still great in the fifth season, but the first four seasons, we get him sparingly, and he is so good when we get him. I just love this version of the Beast so much. The Beast has not been one of my favorites in the comics for like almost two decades now. And it's such a shame because Beast is such a great character. And every time I watch this show, every time we get a great moment with Beast, it's bittersweet because it's like, man, this is like the best beast we're ever going to have. I hope upon hope that they manage to capture how good this beast is when we get X-Men 97. We got a decent beast in X-Men Evolution. We got a pretty good beast in Wolverine and the X-Men. And I really liked Kelsey Grammer as Beast in, X-Men 3. It was like one of the best parts of that movie was his Beast. Nicholas Holt really didn't do it for me as Beast, like at all. Not as Henry McCoy or as the Beast. Didn't really work for me. But, it's a different interpretation. It's a different person playing the character. But yeah, the way that George Buzza does Beast's voice, it's perfect. It has like there's no air of condescension whatsoever. He's just very smart and he's happy making references that only he gets. I do like when he would make a reference and like Storm or Xavier would kind of acknowledge what he was talking about. Yeah, it's the Beast. I just love the Beast. But yeah, that consider yourself fortunate. I had dandruff. Just classic Beast, and I love it. Of course, my favorite Storm line comes from the episode called Orphan's End. This was the episode where Corsair comes back to Earth and not doesn't necessarily try to con the X-Men, but he's maybe not necessarily 100% truthful with the X-Men, but it's the episode where Scott finally figures out that Corsair is his father. And so it's called Orphan's End because at this point Cyclops now is reunited with his father. He's no longer an orphan. And it's a really good episode. It's a fun Shi'ar episode, and the story is mostly Scott and Ororo, right? Cyclops and Storm. And there's a part where the Shi'ar have arrived and they're trying to like arrest Corsair. And so Cyclops and Corsair are going one way and Storm is going another, and they're going to break off and they're going to rendezvous. And Allison Seeley Smith, the voice of Storm, like she does like a no holds barred performance when it comes to Storm. Like she is so over dramatic and yet not over dramatic because it's Storm and you wouldn't expect her to be any less intense than she is. So even though it's like overly dramatic at all times, it really matches with someone like Storm, who is like just an absolute authority wherever she happens to be. So it makes sense that the way that she speaks would be very authoritative, very dramatic, very like loud isn't the word. It's not because there's nothing pompous about it. Like it's totally fitting for someone as regal and as authoritative as Storm, but it's very fun to watch, especially as an adult, because it's like, wow, like the dial it back, lady. Like, it's okay to settle down. I think at one point in season one, Storm is saying something like that, and even Rogue is like, lighten up on the speeches, sugar. Just really great. And my favorite Storm line, I think, because most of the time when Storm is being as dramatic as she is, it's in a moment that merits that kind of response. And we get that in this situation as well, but she probably didn't have to be as dramatic. They have communicators on their costume. She could have just pressed it and spoke normally, but instead she yells like at the top of her lungs. They're about to break up and she yells, and I'm not going to do it because my family's downstairs watching a show and they're like, what the heck is going on? But she yells like, I shall meet you at the monorail. And it's just the line delivery is so ridiculously over the top and yet just so perfect for Storm that there's gifs of it, there's memes of it. It's such like a ridiculous moment. And it's, I think one of the things about the line that really kind of makes you take pause is we know that Xavier is stinking rich, right? Like the X-Men have private jets and schools and danger rooms, and they've got all this stuff. Like we know that wealth is not an issue, and yet we don't ever really understand the vastness of the property owned by Xavier until Storm is like, we need to get to the hangar on the other side of our property, and we need to take the monorail to get there. But just to get to the monorail in and of itself is an adventure. Like the sheer size of the property that Xavier must own, like never mind the fact that they've got all this like advanced technology and stuff that obviously they can afford somehow, just the fact that he owns like a city's worth of land, it just boggles my mind. Like as a dude that owns like 0.2 acres of land that his house is on, like I live in a small suburban neighborhood with very small little plots of land, like I can't fathom owning like, I don't know, 100 acres, 1,000 acres. Like I have no idea how much land this guy owns, but I certainly don't need a monorail to get from my front yard to my backyard. I don't even need a monorail to get in my car and drive to the other side of town. And I don't, it's not like I live in a small town. But I can, you know, I can drive across town in a few minutes. I don't like, I just imagine like having to get into a monorail and going like all the way across town because you have this like secret other hangar over there that has a whole slew of other ships, like spaceships. It just like boggles my mind. So that's my favorite Storm line. I could probably stop there. Like, Rogue's got a ton of them. Pretty much anything Rogue says is like a hilarious, sassy one-liner, and it'll make the list. Like as soon as she starts talking, it's like, yep, add that one to the list. Add that one to the list of great lines. Add that one to the list. Like I said, because I have probably the most nostalgia for season one, a lot of my favorite Rogue lines from season one come from like Night of the Sentinels parts one and two. Like, don't get a moonbird. Like, it's ridiculous. I like when she walks up to Cyclops and she says, "You look as nervous as a long-tailed cat in a room full of rocking chairs." Like, just so many good lines. When Pyro is like trying to flirt with her and he's like, you know, like, how about a kiss? And she's like, in a bull's eye, as she throws him into a dartboard and hits him like dead center in the middle. Yeah, just so many great lines for Rogue. So it's kind of hard to pick what my favorite Rogue line is. It's the same thing with Wolverine. Like, that dude's got so many great lines. Calling Sabretooth, you know, an egg-sucking piece of gutter trash is pretty darn good. I think my favorite, though, is just when he's about to leave to try to track down Morph on his own, you know, track down the Sentinels that took Morph on his own. He's about to leave, and Cyclops is like, "You can't leave." And he just says, you know, "I go where I want to go." Like, it's just perfect Wolverine. But yeah, so many great Wolverine lines as well. Honestly, Cyclops and Jean are fine. I really feel like they don't have the best lines. Like, I almost feel like they get stuck either giving exposition or giving orders. And so they don't have as many of the character moments. And when they do have like small little character moments, it's usually like really tender, heartfelt stuff with one another because, you know, they're in love and all that. So they don't really have like all these great jokey lines. I think at one point I had written down like a joke that Cyclops tells at some point. So if I had to pick a Cyclops line, it would be when they're like trying to let themselves be ambushed by the Sentinels so that they can injure one and follow it back to its base. And he walks up to it, and the Sentinel is like, "Halt, mutant." And he's like, "I surrender." "Not." And then he blasts his leg off. Like, maybe that would be, again, like I keep like defaulting back to Night of the Sentinels parts one and two. But I think it's because I've seen that episode probably 50 times more than I've seen any other episode. Maybe 100 times more. Like, I had all of them on like the official VHS releases. I had them all recorded off the TV, but I think Night of the Sentinels was the one that I got first and had the longest. And I think when we moved from California to Colorado, I actually lost a lot of my stuff. But one of the things that managed to make its way to Colorado with me was my Night of the Sentinels VHS. I lost all the other VHS tapes from season one, but Night of the Sentinels one and two, that those two episodes on that one VHS tape, that managed to make it to Colorado with me. And so I think whenever I wanted to watch X-Men, that was usually my go-to episode until I was able to record a couple others off the TV and stuff. That was like my main one. So it's even if I'm not watching the episodes, even if I haven't watched any of the episodes for like a year, that one is still like the most vivid in my mind. So I kind of like when I'm trying to think of lines, I just default back to that episode. But there you go. Those are some of my favorite lines from some of my favorite characters throughout the series. So I think I don't want to take up a whole lot of time and make this a super long episode. I'm trying to keep this maybe to an hour. So I think maybe I will just do one more top five. And it's going to be my top five episodes overall. So I had to rack my brain, go back through all 76 episodes, try to figure out which ones I liked the most, which ones are my favorite. Not necessarily which ones are the best episodes, but which are like my go-to. If I had to make would you call it a mixtape? If I was only able to own five episodes of X-Men the Animated Series, kind of, Desert Island episodes, which episodes would I choose so, be able to watch over and over? Like, which are the episodes that I would want to have available to me if I couldn't watch any of the other ones? So, without further ado, here are my top five episodes of X-Men the Animated Series. Number five is going to be Come the Apocalypse. So this is a season one episode. This was the episode right after The Cure, where we find out that Apocalypse has found out a way to turn mutants into his slaves. And he manages to do this to Warren and a few other characters, who were like Morlocks and stuff. A few other characters he manages to give this cure to, and he turns them into his horsemen of the apocalypse. So this is the episode where we have, Archangel, the Archangel of Death, and we get to see famine and pestilence and war. It is like a global episode. We've got stuff happening in Europe and stuff happening in the United States, and it's, this really good episode. It was our first major introduction to Apocalypse and his philosophy. And I would probably say that my favorite X-Men villain is Apocalypse. And it changes all the time. My top five fluctuate. Usually I say that my top villain is like Sentinels. Usually I say Magneto, even though Magneto is more right than wrong, even though he's, quote unquote, a villain. Right now, I would say that Apocalypse is my favorite X-Men villain, and this is the best Apocalypse episode because this one is the closest to the X-Factor storyline where we have the introduction of Angel as Archangel, which at the time that I'm recording this, it's like September 22nd. I believe it's the anniversary, the 36-year anniversary of Archangel's first appearance as Death in the pages of X Factor. I forget what issue that was off the top of my head. 23, 22, maybe. I think it's 22 and no, 23 and 24. I think it's 23 and 24. And so 23 is the first appearance, and that issue was published in 1987 on this day that I'm recording that. So that's a fun fact. But yeah, Come the Apocalypse is my number five. I just love that episode. It's got death, Archangel. It's got Apocalypse. It's got the X-Men working together. It's a fun episode, really action-packed, really shows X-Men on like a global level, and I love it. Number four is Cold Comfort. So the season three episode Cold Comfort, one of my favorite episodes. Anyone who's been listening to Snicktoons or Talkin' Snicked knows that I am a sucker for 1990s Peter David X Factor. And this episode guest stars not only Iceman, one of the five original X-Men, and the only one that we hadn't seen yet, but it also guest stars 90s X-Factor. We have Forge, we get Havoc, Strong Guy, Quicksilver, Wolfsbane, Multiple Man, Polaris. It's fantastic. It is a great episode. We get to see the X-Men kind of go toe-to-toe with X-Factor. They don't really go into the X-Factor storyline very much. They just kind of show up at the end. There's a little battle, and it turns out that, like, Polaris has joined them, and they're kind of like an X-Men team that's sponsored by the government. And she tries to get Iceman to join, and he's like, nah. And so then Cyclops is like, maybe you should, you know, come back to the X-Men. And he's like, nah. Just a really great episode. I love watching it. It's so much fun. Like I said, Iceman and X-Factor. It's a great episode. So season three episode Cold Comfort as my number four. My number three favorite episode of X-Men the Animated Series is the season four episode Weapon X Lies and Videotape. Now, this one almost... I almost had a different episode in the same exact spot. I almost put the episode Red Dawn here, which is the episode where Wolverine and Jubilee and then eventually a few other X-Men go to Russia with Colossus to try to stop Omega Red. And I absolutely love that episode. And the more I thought about it, the more I ended up having to bump that episode for Weapon X Lies and Videotape. Because you'll see, as we get into my top two episodes, this one kind of is a follow-up episode to another one. I probably tipped you all off now, and you know what my number one or number two episode is. But either way, this was such a great follow-up to that episode. We dive more into Wolverine's past. We get to see more of the Weapon X, and we get fun appearances from Sabretooth, and then brand new appearances from Silver Fox and Maverick. We also get Beast tagging along, which, of course, this version of Beast is always the best version. So anytime we get animated series Beast in an episode, it's going to be a good episode. But this was such a fantastic adaptation of the Return to Weapon X and the Shiva scenario storylines from the Larry Hama run of Wolverine in the 90s. Like, just such a great adaptation, just such a great episode overall. It's really very good, and it's one of those episodes where it makes me wish that we would have gotten a Wolverine cartoon. I think it was way back in season two when I had my friend Rob Luther on for Till Death Do Us Part, part one and two. And in one of those episodes, I want to say it was part two, that we did not necessarily like a top five, but we kind of had a discussion of like five X-Men projects that we would like to see happen, like kind of like dream X-Men projects, whether it be like a new video game series or a different live action movie, or I don't know, like a slip and slide that is Iceman themed, you know, something like that. And I think my number one project that I would like to see is like a Batman the Animated Series style Wolverine cartoon, like Bruce Timm, you know, and Paul Dini kind of coming together and doing a Wolverine cartoon. Like, that's what I want to see. And I don't think that we're ever going to get something like that. But we do get brief snippets of how great that would be with certain episodes of X-Men the Animated Series. And I don't think any episode embodies that more than Weapon X Lies and Videotape. So I had to throw that one into my top five. I almost put it as number five, but I was like, no, it's Wolverine-centric and it's so good. And even though I love Come the Apocalypse and Cold Comfort, I do think Weapon X Lies and Videotape, I like that one more. So I ended up putting that. And I didn't want to bump off Apocalypse or Cold Comfort for Red Dawn. So unfortunately, Red Dawn fell off. And we got Weapon X Lies and Videotape as my number three favorite episode of X-Men the Animated Series. So we're getting into the top two. And my number two favorite episode of X-Men the Animated Series is the season four episode Nightcrawler. Nightcrawler is one of my favorite X-Men of all time. He has been one of my favorites ever since I was a kid. I've had a handful of favorite X-Men over the years. Archangel was my favorite X-Man once. Nightcrawler was my favorite X-Man once. Wolverine, Cyclops. I think there was a brief period where Colossus was my favorite X-Man. There was a period where Jean Grey, Rogue, you know, I've kind of cycled through all of them, but I've kind of landed on like a top three that has been pretty consistent over the years of Wolverine, Cyclops, and Nightcrawler. And I usually classify it as Wolverine is my favorite Marvel character, but my favorite X-Man is Nightcrawler. And I just think they did such a fantastic job with his introduction and his characterization, and the voice actor, Adrian Howe, not sure how to say his last name, H-O-U-G-H. So we all know how English is. Sometimes it is inconsistent. So I don't know, Huff, I guess, maybe like tough. But he was the voice of Nightcrawler. It's an amazing job. Just, I love that episode. And not just for the Nightcrawler content, but like for the Wolverine arc that we have in that episode, as well as the Rogue arc. It was just a really fantastic episode. It's one that I never tire of watching. I can always come back to this episode and just know that I'm going to be entertained and I'm going to have a great time and I will love everything about it. Of course, as a man of faith, it's also nice to see a character who also has that faith that isn't ridiculed in pop culture, and is actually allowed to explain his beliefs in a way that doesn't come across as condescending or judgmental. He's just a very loving and open character, and I love seeing a character like that portrayed in that way. Of course, it's fitting because, I mean, that's how he's portrayed in the comics as well, but it's not something that you would expect to see on TV, at least not in today's world. So there's another reason why the Nightcrawler episode is just such a favorite of mine. And of course, this takes us into my number one favorite episode of X-Men the Animated Series. I'm sure you've all guessed it with my tip off from Weapon X Lies and Videotape, but this is the season two episode Repo Man. This episode was written by Len Wein, and although it's not based on Wolverine's first appearance in the comics fighting the Incredible Hulk, it is tied to his time in Canada, which of course was started by Len Wein. So it all works out. This episode is kind of an adaptation of two important Wolverine stories. One of them is Wanted Weapon X, from Uncanny X-Men, off the top of my head, Uncanny X-Men number 108. Maybe it's 109. Don't quote me. It's the one where Vindicator or Guardian or whoever, it's James McDonald Hudson. When he comes back to the United States to try to capture Wolverine and force him back to Canada to work once again for Department H, it takes that storyline, it builds onto the chaos in Canada from Uncanny X-Men 123. I'm doing all this off the top of my head, so bear with me. I'm sure I'm wrong. Please correct me in the Discord if you're a member. Uncanny X-Men 123, maybe, when the X-Men are making their way back to the United States after their whole ordeal in the Savage Land and then going through Japan and all that, they finally get back to Canada, you know, North America. And as they are in Canada, they are attacked by not just James, but all of the rest of Alpha Flight. So we get that, those two stories conflated together in the first half of this episode. And then we actually get like a loose adaptation of Barry Windsor Smith's Weapon X. And of course, anyone who's listened to like some of my earliest episodes of Talkin' Snick Proper, you'll know that as a Wolverine fan, I am a proponent that if someone is going to start learning the character of Wolverine, the two things they need to read first are Wolverine Volume 1 from Claremont and Miller, the Wolverine story in Japan with Mariko and Shingen and all that, because that story is going to tell you who Wolverine is. He is a man who struggles with his animal side, but he is a man who, despite his gruff and ferocious exterior, feels his emotions perhaps more deeply than almost anyone. He has the strongest sense of honor among almost any X-Men character, and all of that is at the forefront of Wolverine Volume 1. Of course, we also get to see him have just some great action sequences and fights against ninjas and against Shingen, just great stuff. We get to see the animal ferocity of Wolverine. We get to see, you know, the best there is at what he does. We get to see all of that. But the story at its core is driven not by Wolverine's berserker rage, but by Wolverine's heart. So you have to read Volume 1 because that's going to tell you who Wolverine is. But you have to read Weapon X. That's the other, like, the two places where you need to start. Weapon X by Barry Windsor Smith is the other one you need to read. It's a quick read. It's very short, and it's going to tell you exactly what Wolverine is. He is an unstoppable killing machine. He is a ferocious animal, a berserker rage. He is someone who everyone needs to be afraid of. He is a living weapon. That is what Wolverine is. And because I find both of these stories to be so important to the character of Wolverine, the fact that Repo Man as an episode also loosely adapts that storyline is another reason why this is my favorite episode of X-Men the Animated Series. It takes some really great Wolverine stuff from his background, as well as adapts a really key piece to Wolverine's character. So Repo Man, Season 2, Episode 5, is my number one favorite episode of X-Men the Animated Series. So, Bub, that is going to do it for all of the discussion that I have, all of the countdowns and top fives and stuff. Like I said, I'm trying to keep this episode relatively short. I would love to hear from all of you. So if you have got favorite quotes, if you've got top five episodes, if you want to rank your seasons, go ahead and give that to me. You can email me talksnicked@gmail.com, or you can join the Discord, link to it in the show notes, and let me know. Luckily, I was able to reach out to a few people in the Discord, some listeners, as well as former guest hosts, and I was able to get some feedback and some answers from them. So I am going to go through and read. I got some pieces here from a couple of different people, and I'm going to read these as our final segment, and then I will let you get back to your Saturday. So I had posed this question to the Discord to see what my listeners and fellow hosts and such had to say. And like I said, a couple of people did respond. And so I wanted to take the time to read their responses out on the episode. So this first one that I have here comes from my pal Kirkland. He guest hosted on Season 2. Episode 13, which was Reunion Part 2, and I had Kirkland on as like a two-man guest host appearance because Kirkland is the co-host of one of my favorite podcasts around, which is Turtles Forever. So he and Rob Luther talk Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and I absolutely love that show. It's been a little while since we've had an episode, but Kirkland has been super busy in the meantime. He had some interns way back in the day that, they got a little crazy, and they kind of put this thing together called Marceline's Playground, and they would occasionally take over the feed and grace us, perhaps curse us with their shenanigans. And unfortunately, you know, Kirkland had to kind of rein them in and have control over them, which is a hard thing to do. So if you ever want to hear the exploits of these so-called Marceline's Playground type, definitely make sure you go and you check out the Turtles Forever feed, because you'll find all the adventures there. Of course, he recently launched a brand new show called Regular Time, and it is a recap show of The Regular Show, which is a show that I hadn't watched before, but once I saw that he was starting this series and dropping episodes, I've gone back. I'm about 7 episodes through the first season, and so I can start listening, I think, to Regular Time. So I'm pretty excited about that. But again, this response comes from my friend Kirkland. And he says, I don't have a top 5. The whole show kind of blurs together for me. All the episodes just feel so joined, and it's hard for me to pick each one out without searching them up. I can say, however, that one of the top episodes for me is the one at the end of season 1 where they fight all of the Sentinels. Wolverine actually gets to tear something up and teams up with Gambit for what kind of feels like a suicide mission. My favorite characters are the obligatory answer, Wolverine. I also like Cable, Jubilee. Rogue is probably the reason why all the dudes my age watched the show before we knew what hormones were. I really like Gambit too, because he's the X-Men version of Boomhauer. yeah, that one, that cracked me up there. I was not expecting that. But yeah, there's a... I guess if you want to describe him in a way, it would be the X-Men's version of Boomhauer. And of course, Kirkland is exactly right about Rogue. One of my first crushes before I really knew what crushes were. So, thanks so much, Kirkland, for the answer. And yeah, I mean, a lot of the episodes really blur together because they're all so great. And it's hard to just kind of nail one down without going through and being like, which episode was that again? Which one was this? And then, you know, having to track it down and all that. So seeing how they all blur together. But yeah, I think the final decision, that's the season 1 finale where they have to go in and they're fighting against Master Mold and all the Sentinels are there. Even Magneto joins the battle at one point, but yeah, the Wolverine Gambit, like going into the tunnel and everything. One of my favorite parts of the entire season is when Gambit is about to like ambush some Sentinels and he throws a playing card down, and one of the Sentinels gets all like down on his hands and knees and he gets his like camera all the way down and he's like, it appears to be the Ace of Spades. And then it explodes and like all this, you know, there's a cave in and a bunch of the Sentinels have to climb out, but it looks like they've won the day. So great episode. And yeah, thanks so much for the response, Kirkland. And yeah, dude, I'm looking forward to listening to Regular Time. So another response I got is from a friend of the show, a dude named Baxter. We actually first met, funnily enough, on the Turtles Forever Discord. And he had shared some photos of some like X-Men Toy Biz action figures that he had recently got, because there's a section in there for just, you know, 90s nostalgia or just retro stuff. And from there, he and I got to talking, and I let him know that I had an X-Men podcast, and he's been a devoted listener and just an awesome friend and fan ever since. He's a big part of what makes the Talk and Snick Discord such a fun place to be. I always mention the fact that there's really only a handful of us in there talking X-Men, and Baxter is one who always has just really great things to say, whether he's sharing new pieces of his collection or just throwing compliments towards the show, which I always appreciate. I like constructive criticism, but I think I like compliments a little bit more. And so I've always just had such a great time interacting with Baxter. And he, of course, sent in an answer as well. And so I'll read that for you guys now. Like Kirkland, he also doesn't have a top five. So he starts off, I don't really have a top five list, but the most memorable episodes are probably the Phoenix Saga and Dark Phoenix, plus the Days of Future Past from the first season. I think my favorite overall seasons were 2 and 3. I love Beast and Nightcrawler, so the Beauty and the Beast episode comes to mind, and the Nightcrawler episode from season 4. My favorite memories is, honestly, that sweet art on the VHS tapes and the toy lines. So thank you so much for the words, Baxter. And yeah, I think, Days of Future Past is one that I hadn't touched upon. I did mention Phoenix and Dark Phoenix and why I think season 3 was so good. Of course, Nightcrawler, the Beauty and the Beast episode was also a fantastic episode. Like I said, anything with Beast is going to be close to the top. But yeah, the Days of Future Past was another one that was just a fantastic way to adapt an amazing storyline and stay as true to it as they could, but refitting it for this show. They used it as a way to introduce Bishop, who eventually becomes like a big character throughout the course of the show. We know that he's going to be a major piece of X-Men 97 going forward. So yeah, I really love the callback to Days of Future Past from season 1 as well. And again, Baxter, thanks so much for all of your continued support. And of course, for this answer and giving me something to read on the show. This next one that I have is actually a transcription of a recording. Because I'm not very tech savvy, and all of my devices are kind of disparate, and I end up using like 3 different devices usually to edit and record and upload and all this stuff, I didn't have an easy way to go through to grab the recording and throw it into the episode. But of course, this guy always goes above and beyond, and he included a transcription of his recording. And so I will be able to read that on this show. And if I'm able to figure out how to get this thing ripped from my email and converted into the right format and uploaded into the episode by the time I release it, then hopefully you'll all hear it. In the meantime, I will try to read it. And this is from Steve Banvard. He says, one of my favorite background characters from X-Men the Animated Series is Mole. Mole is one of the Morlocks, and he first appears in season 2, episode 1, Till Death Do Us Part, part 1. He only appears briefly as one of the random mutants targeted by the Friends of Humanity. He's being cornered in an alley by an FOH mob, and he does have a line. He says, please don't hurt me. I'm just an ordinary mutant. I don't have any special powers. I just look different. Of course, the hateful Friends of Humanity don't care, and we cut away before we see any violence and can only imagine what they do to poor Mole. Thankfully, Mole does appear in later episodes and is in the series finale episode, season 5, episode 10, Graduation Day, so Mole does survive his encounter with the Friends of Humanity. Now, I remember this guy from the comics. His first appearance is in X-Factor number 51 from 1990, created by Louise Simonson and Terry Shoemaker. Much like how he is in the animated series episode, Mole is a background character in the issue, barely interacting with any members of X-Factor, which at this time consisted of the original 5 X-Men. What makes Mole so memorable is that he's being hunted by Sabretooth. Following the events of the Mutant Massacre, Sabretooth is hunting down all remaining Morlocks to finish the job he started in Uncanny X-Men 210 from 1986, 4 years ago. Sabretooth continues to hunt Mole for the next 3 X-Factor issues, number 51, 52, and 53, and again, it ends on a cliffhanger where we don't see what happens once Sabretooth catches up to him. We can only imagine what Sabretooth does to poor Mole. Mole made a reappearance in the comics as recently as 2022, so miraculously, somehow, Mole survived his encounter with Sabretooth as well. What I like about the character. Whichever media he's portrayed in, he's like a prey animal. As a character, Mole was created and exists solely to be hunted and preyed upon. That's his pathetic lot in life. Yet somehow, he always manages to survive. And the fact that his animated series version mirrors his comic book counterpart so closely means someone working the animated series, whether that's the writer Mark Edward Edens or the director Larry Houston, someone's paying attention and taking care to stay true to the source material. Thanks. Steve, thank you so much for this email. On brand for Steve Banvard, this is super well thought out and is so more in depth than what I could have possibly asked for, but I love it. One of the things I asked for was a list of people's favorite characters, and of course, Steve had to think outside of the box and give just this fantastically well thought out answer, rife with facts and references, and I love it. This is so typically Steve Banvard, and I think it's a great addition to this episode. So, Steve, thank you so much for that. I'm going to try to figure out how to get the sound clip added and thrown onto this episode at some point, hopefully by the time it debuts. But even if I'm not able to get it on there right away, I'm going to try to throw it in there at some point, because I think that you probably would tell this story better than I did reading it. And with that comes my final piece. And this one is from my good friend, Kurt Schmidt. Of course, Kurt is someone I do another podcast with. It's been on hiatus, but we are talking about resurrecting it and trying to figure out what we're going to do to bring it back since it's been a couple of months. And that, of course, is the Cast Without Fear, a Daredevil Comics podcast. Of course, Kurt Schmidt has been on so many episodes of Saturday Morning Snicktoons as well. And he kind of gives me a different top five, but we'll get to that. So this is what Kurt says. X-Men the Animated Series was so much more than just a cartoon. While I don't have the clear memories like Ryan of watching specific episodes, I do remember the impact of it as a youth. I remember my friends and I being excited about the show and arguing about who the best was or who would win in a fight. The show happened in a perfect storm of sorts, along with the Marvel trading cards and the action figures. I played with the toys, but was most interested in the cards. I remember buying and trading those with my friends, finally having the stats with rankings to put an end to all the arguments. Those were the days. Then there was the arcade and the Sega game. I played the hell out of that one. The show was definitely a gateway into comics, just not the X line. I got enough of those characters from all the other outlets. I needed more of the characters I didn't see as much, like the Punisher and Spider-Man. The show would stick with me through the years, with me going to Target on release day for the DVD set of season 1 and 2, and most recently with my interest in Talkin' Snicked. I remember Brett, that's our friend Brett Scott from Marvel Plus, telling me about this Wolverine podcast and listening to Ryan on Marvel Plus, but it was the Saturday Morning Snicktoons segment that got me to first tune in. I'd like to say that I've followed along and watched every episode. I didn't. I did, however, listen to each with bated breath, I might add. It was equally frustrating and exciting, the way Ryan would start each episode and introducing our special guest host. After a while, I got to know each host like they were part of Marvel's Merry Mutants themselves, which brings me to my final top five. The top five Saturday Morning Snicktoons guest hosts. Number five, Brett Scott. Brett might have gotten higher if not for the 12 other podcasts where I can find his ramblings. Number four, Maxton. Which Summers brother is Maxton, Scott or Alex? I'll let you decide. Number 3. Steve Banvard. Steve's attention to detail, knowledge, and love for everything X is uncanny and truly a treat to the ears. Number 2. Ariana. Listening to the siblings talk and reminisce is quite amusing. Each guest brings out a different side of our astonishing host, but leave it to the sister to get the most entertaining one. Number 1. Landy. Far and away, the most lighthearted, entertaining fun you can have listening to a father and son chat about X happenings. The second I hear Landy's the guest, I have a smile ear to ear for the rest of the day. Thanks, Ryan, for putting together something special and resurrecting Talkin' Snicked. I have had fun conversations and made new friends thanks to this show and will be forever grateful to be a part of it. The podcast has been an extreme delight, and I look forward to the all-new, all-different Saturday morning Snicktoons to come. So, Kurt, thanks so much for that list, that top five, and that write-up. It's fantastic, and I love it. Of course, getting to hear about the trading cards. Like, I think the trading cards is probably where my love of comics first started. I'd mentioned that I had some of the Marvel trading cards and stuff before this series ever came out. And because of that, I was loosely aware, you know, of these characters before the cartoon debuted. But the trading cards is something that I collected all the way throughout the 90s. I think the last time I collected it was like the Marvel Masterpieces, maybe from like 1998, or maybe it was the X-Men series, like the Fleet Ultra 97 or 98. I collected the cards like almost all the way throughout the 90s, and I've been slowly rebuilding my collection, buying like complete base sets on eBay and other outlets, just trying to track down all of those cards. So it's a lot of fun to hear someone talk about the trading cards, because I feel like that's not something I talk about a whole lot on this, but it's certainly a huge piece of my fandom. So, Bub, that is it for X-Men the Animated Series, a retrospective. I had a great time with this show, and before I end the episode, I just want to give a sincere and heartfelt welcome to everyone who has ever appeared as a special guest host on this show. It was, I'm not going to lie, a slog to get through this entire series, and I would not have been able to do it if it wasn't for the enthusiasm of every guest host that has ever come on here. So a big thank you and shout out to my sister, Ariana, to my sons, Maxton and Landon, to my close personal real life friends, Jamie Sherman and Kurt Bishop, to my internet friends, my fellow podcasters, Brett Scott, Noel Reed, Ryan Sanio. Thank you to all of you. Thank you to Rob Luther and Kirkland. Thank you to people who aren't podcasters, but are just friends that I've made over the internet, who have come on to guest host on episodes: Kurt Schmidt, Steve Banvard, Quinn Hesters. I also want to give a big shout out to Dave Horrocks. He's someone that I brought on for an episode in season one, and he's an awesome guy. He's got a great podcast network, and he's one that I regret not having brought back. He's in the Discord, and I just don't think that I ever was able to reach out to him directly. And it's too bad, because he was a fantastic guest host as well, brought such great enthusiasm. And I just want to say thank you to all of you. I would not have been able to keep going on this show and to do what I managed to do without each and every one of you having agreed to come on, to give up your time, to get prepared for this show, and to help me watch and break down these episodes. And of course, I also want to thank the listeners. Another reason why I've been able to keep going is even when I would take breaks and I would expect that people had stopped listening and then had walked away from the show, every time I would post a new episode, even if it had been months since the last episode, I would still see the same number, if not higher, of people coming back and listening. And I just want to say thank you to everyone who has listened to at least one episode, if not all of these episodes of Saturday Morning Snicktoons. Thank you. Thank you to everyone. And I think we will leave it here. I've already talked about my plans for the future of Snicktoons, so we'll see where that leads us. And in the meantime, I am working on getting Talkin' Bamf Season 2 ready for October. So again, just a big thank you to everyone. Thank you all so much. Until next time, bub.